A Kentucky man accused of murdering an elderly Ohio woman says he's seen the ghost of his victim. Daniel French's confession in a Kentucky jail reveals some disturbing details in the death of an 86-year-old Barbara Howe. The audio is from a 40-minute interview with French after he was captured in Rockcastle County back in 2014. French is accused of killing Howe more than 2 years earlier in Ohio. Her body was found in the trunk of his car. During the confession, French tells the detective that he only meant to rob the elderly woman, not kill her. It's an interesting twist. French told detectives that he was haunted by Howe's ghost and that he had apologized to the apparition. "I seen Miss Howe's ghost and I told her I was sorry," he said. Wow. In a moment, we will be talking about paranormal encounters with Gary Gillespie. His work is called Chronicles of the Unexplained. And he is next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Gary Gillespie with us, Chronicles of the Unexplained. Gary has a lifelong interest in the paranormal. His family is from Virginia, dating back to 1617. And that family farm steeped in Civil War history as well. He's been a guest with our friend Dave Schrader. And here he is on Coast to Coast, Gary Gillespie. Hey, Gary, welcome.
How are you doing, George? This is truly an honor. I cannot tell you how excited I am to be on your show tonight.
Me too. And I mean, you have touched a nerve with this book, Chronicles of the Unexplained. And I should read the subtitle because that's even spookier. True Stories of Haunted Houses, Bigfoot, and Other Paranormal Encounters. You know, Gary, wherever I go, speaking engagements all around the country, people who email me to here at the program, people love the unusual, the mysteries, the paranormal. I mean, they love the hard stuff, but don't get me wrong. I mean, the program we just had on vaccinations, people need that. But they also like to get scared and the mysteries. And do you find that wherever you go that just people are into this?
I do. And I think in today's world, it's necessary. I mean, granted, it's just my opinion, but you know, we're so locked into our day-to-day lives, our you know, drive to make a living and to support our families and to put our kids through college that we kind of forget our other side, our the mysteries that we had during our childhood. I think if we need anything in this world right now, it's a mystery. It's something to keep, you know, the hair on our neck standing up, to keep us kind of in our inquisitive state. We can't know everything, George. You know, there's got to be something out there that we just can't explain and can't fully understand. And I think I feel it more now than I did, you know, throughout my life.
You know what? I think, Gary, the older we get, the more tuned in we become to the psychic realm, the unusual realm. We're more fascinated with life after death. I mean, I know with me, I want answers. Before I go, I want answers. I want that comfort factor to know what might be on the other side. I guess I'm almost obsessed with it. How about you?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of becoming that way. You know, I grew up basically a workaholic, threw myself into my life's work, my family business, my family, my recreation. And I really had kind of a dry spell there, if you will, you know, from maybe my mid-30s into my early 40s, where I lost that spark from my childhood, you know, where I could look out a window at night and kind of get a chill, you know, what's out there? Is there something out there looking back at me? You know, I lost that. I mean, you just get so wrapped up in day-to-day life that you kind of go numb. And I was kind of brought back into it rather forcefully, you know, and maybe it was a good thing. It's nice to have that back in my life. And the more people that I talk to on the subject, you know, I see them going through the same struggles that I did. You know, life takes over. It kind of takes us away from our more, is the correct term, primal side. You know, we kind of lose contact with our old ways. You know, and
what, so, was the book Chronicles of the Unexplained your first and only book?
Yes, it is, and I'm really, it wrote itself. There's no other way to put it. You know, I guess this work probably, if a guy would look at its very roots, its very beginning, it began in my childhood, without a doubt. And But recently I was writing an internet column for the trucking industry in Colorado, and back to kind of what we were talking about, you know, the bulk of my articles were directly related to the trucking industry, overregulation, government control, harassment by DOT officers, you know, how we're being treated as second-rate citizens. It almost feels like we're a test group. And the cool thing about the column that I was writing is I could see how many hits I was getting per article. And so I ran a couple of fun articles out there. You know, it was stories about the good old days, about the old trucks, about what we used to do 25 years ago, you know, how we lived. And those had pretty incredible hits on them compared to the ones that were, you know, down to business and complaining about how things are and why aren't we doing anything about it. And so out of pure orneriness in 2009, I believe it was, I decided to write three ghost stories. It was getting kind of, you know, the fall time of the year, and I was just in the mood.
I love that time of year, by the
way.
Yeah,
I love it. You know, that you get that little cold mornings and stuff like that, and you just feel it. It's time, you know. And so I thought I had three ghost stories from my childhood that were trucking related, and I thought I would put those on there and just do something totally different. And boy, did it get attention. And one person that was drawn to it was author Annie Wilder. And
cool.
Really encouraged me to continue on and get some of these stories from my childhood friends, from family, get it on paper, and especially what we were experiencing during that time period, and get a manuscript together and let's see what we can do with it. And so I did that.
Good for you. Well, you did a great job. And just at the outset, and we'll talk about it again throughout the night, Gary, but where do people get your book, Chronicles of the Unexplained?
They can buy it directly from the publisher, Llewellyn. It can come from Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's going to be just about everywhere.
Good for you.
Yeah.
What do you think the paranormal is, Gary? If somebody had to ask you, as I'm going to, what's the definition? What is it?
Well, I'm going to have my own definition. There's no doubt about it. And I think it's a very broad spectrum. I look at it as situations that we can't explain, be it ghost contact, premonitions, intuitions that most of the time I think we as adults ignore, the Bigfoot phenomenon, you know, creatures that we can't explain. Mm-hmm. I would even kind of bring in, you know, the animal mutilations, of which some stories I had written regarding that subject. You know, for me, it's a broad spectrum.
When you deal with some of these stories, and let's face it, I do too on a daily basis, some of them are way out there.
Yes.
But I think it's important, and I get this a lot from people who say, you know what, you're so respectful and kind to the people who call in, even though their stories are way out there. You know, I come from a simple theory, and that is, I'm not going to put anybody down for their belief system, for their story. Maybe some of them are making it up, but I think a lot of people actually have had these experiences occur to them. And far be it from me to be the one to chastise them for that, because I'm looking for the same answers everybody else is. And I've done that all my life in my broadcast career. And I think that people, when they come on the show, even like you now with the book Chronicles of the Unexplained, you know you're going to get a fair shake. You're not going to get ridiculed for whatever you say. We may not believe it. We may believe it, but you're not going to get put down for it. And I think that's important, don't you?
I do too. Yes, definitely. And that was one decision that I had to make, me and my family, was did I want to open myself up to that type of scrutiny? You know, the original plan for this work was to not be published. It was supposed to be a gift to my childhood friends and some of my family. I wanted to record some of the stories that I'd remembered from our childhood, get it in writing, kind of put it into a book form, and then mail it to my childhood friends in Iowa as a thank you. You know, thank you for this wonderful childhood that I had that I was able to share with you. And several of you are listening tonight, I'm sure, and that's what it was intended to be. So I had to ask that question of myself when Annie was talking to me about possibly putting a larger project together, was do I want to open myself up to that? And then as people started coming to me, and I mean, I really didn't have to search for many stories outside of my little circle, but when they did, I definitely showed them respect. I would look in their eyes and I would see how heartfelt they were in their explanations of what they'd experienced and the fact that they were trusting me. You know, you can't betray that trust. This is another human being there. Let's listen to what they have to say and treat them with the most respect I possibly can.
As you put the book together, what were some of the stories that really stood out for you?
Oh, boy. Well, of course, the personal ones because, you know, we lived them. But I think it might surprise some of the readers. I think probably the story called Checking on Mom was the one that still hurts me today to hear the story.
Checking on Mom. What happened to Mom?
Well, it was a... It was
a
story told to us.
Is this a sad ending, Gary? Sad ending or a happy ending?
It was a, I guess you would say a sad ending.
All right, let's hear it.
Yes, it was, I was in a safety class in Iowa City, Iowa, oh gosh, back in 1995. I was thinking of contracting a truck to a company there, and of course I had to go through their safety class. It was taught by a Nebraska State Patrol officer, a former State Patrol officer. And so you know how classes get. They get boring. And we kind of started making small talk, and he started telling us some really funny stories about experience that he'd had pulling over drunk drivers and listening to their excuses, trying to prove to him that they weren't drunk, catching teenagers on lonely dirt roads, making out, criminals that forgot to fill their car with gasoline before they went on a crime spree. And then he just kind of stopped. And I'll never forget this until the day I die. And he began to tell us a story about a two-car motor vehicle accident that he had to respond to in the Omaha, Nebraska area. And he had come up to the accident scene. The caller, of course, was frantic. Mm-hmm. So 911 couldn't give him a lot of information on, you know, the dispatcher couldn't give him a lot of information on what was going on. But when he got there, he had found a pickup truck sticking up out of the ditch. And apparently the husband of the 911 caller was trying to hold the driver from running away, but the man was so drunk he couldn't hardly stand up. And, of course, he was relatively uninjured. Directly in front of his patrol cruiser was a teenage girl laying face down on the pavement in a pool of blood. She'd been ejected from a car from the car that her mother was still trapped in, and her mother was barely clinging on to life. So he had checked the girl on the pavement immediately for any vitals, which there were none. She was torn up badly. County car arrived on scene. He detained the drunk driver. Fire and ambulance arrived on scene, confirmed the girl dead, and he began to help guide the hydraulic cables for the firefighters so they could cut the car open to try to get the mother out of the car and try to save her life.
Jaws of life, I guess. Huh?
Yes, yes. And so while, you know, of course, it's a noisy scene, a lot of light, you know, off of the engines and stuff like that. And of course, the young girl on the pavement was now covered with a blanket, you know, to cover the dead body. And he happened to look over and saw her laying on her stomach with her head propped in her hands. And how he described her was, is it was like a little girl sitting in front of a television laying on her stomach, you know, with her head propped in her hands. And so he tapped the firefighter on the shoulder, indicating that he was going to go over and talk to her. And he kind of sat down next to her on one knee and put his hand on her shoulder and said, "What is it, honey?" And she said, "Where's my mommy? I want my mommy." And he said, "We're trying to get her cut out of the car. And we're going to take care of her." And she said, "Oh, okay," and just laid back down on the pavement. And he said he could feel bones popping in her back as she laid back down on the pavement. And then he looked at us and said she was dead. The ambulance crew confirmed her dead. The paramedic called her a core. She was covered up and confirmed dead. And so that was kind of the end of the story. It was a real heartbreaking story. And shortly after that accident, he resigned from the State Patrol and started doing safety classes for large trucking companies, which he was really good at.
He was never the same, was he?
Never the same. It really messed with him. And being in that class that day, I mean, I can still get choked up over it because I can remember to this day the expressions on his face and really how bad he hurt over that.
That is sad. I had a call once from someone who is an EMT, emergency medical, and they were off duty. It was a woman. And she said she came upon late at night, she was the only one there, an accident, single car, something had happened, something horrible. Mm-hmm. And the victim was on the side of the road near the car. She jumps out. She's trying to call 911 in one hand while she's running over to the victim who's lying face down. And the person was a guy, was wearing like, coveralls. And she looks over and she sees a guy standing on the side of the road. It's almost pitch black. And she's screaming at him, get some help. Get some help. Please call 911. As she's trying to do it too. She realizes that was the guy who was lying there dead. She was actually looking at the spirit of the guy who died.
Unreal.
That's your next book.
Yeah. I don't know how I'd react to that.
But we get, and we probably will when we open up the phone lines next hour with you, we get these stories all the time. One of your favorite places in the world, I'm told, is Central City, Colorado. How come?
Most definitely. It began as a love, I should say, since childhood. As a teenager, I was and still am big into electric trains. I would model bits and pieces of Central City, Colorado. I was almost to the point of obsession on the area, and I could never really describe or explain why. Until my wife had got us in touch with a paranormal research group that helped us in the completion of this book called Spirit Realm Investigative Project. It's run by a woman named Leanna Jonas. And she said that's a very common occurrence that she has recognized in the Central City area, is that it seems that the town seems to draw people to it. For me, it's the lay of the land. It's how the town is laid out. It's the history. And I have never in my life run into more people in that area that believe they live in a haunted town. It's very interesting. And there's a lot to write about there. So I would say that's probably my interest.
What has been for you the scariest story that you've come across? I mean, because, the couple I've just, the one I relayed, I've talked another one about a police officer, two of them. They went to a house of a heart attack victim, saw an old man lying on the floor, and a little old man let them in, realized that the little old man who let them in was the guy lying on the floor as well. So it's those kinds of things. But those aren't spooky. Those are just as you reacted, they're wow ghost stories.
Yes.
Have you come across a story, though, that has been the most frightening story you've ever heard in your life?
Boy, I would have to say it would be what myself and my family experienced. I've heard a lot of terrifying stories, but until it's inside your house where you can't escape it at bedtime, it's with you at breakfast, it's with you at supper, I would definitely have to say that it's what we experienced, because it was so very real. That was our purchase of a home in Grand Junction, Colorado, and what had happened to my family throughout the 5 years that we were in that house. It ended in a photograph, a definite confirmation that there was definitely something in the house after 2 years of my basically denial, refusing to believe that there was really anything wrong with the place other than, foundation settling or wild imaginations.
There are a lot of houses like that, aren't there?
I believe so. Yeah, and I don't think that it matters how old the house is. I think it could have something to do with its location.
That could be. That might have a lot to do with it. Gary, we're going to talk more about your work, Chronicles of the Unexplained. And yes, next hour, we'll take your phone calls, your stories, your questions when we come back. Well, if you're watching our television program, Beyond Belief, you'll never be lonesome, because we've got all kinds of guests that come rolling into that show for you. And it's just a fun part of being part of what we do. beyondbelief.com. Take a look at it. There's a special preview going on now, so take advantage of it. Go to beyondbelief.com. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Gary Gillespie, his work, Chronicles of the Unexplained. You've talked about ghost business in your book. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I guess I'm referencing the ghost tour type business that's going on now.
It's
paranormal
huge.
Investigators that aggravate, intimidate, threaten to try to get responses. And and I really am not comfortable with that at all. I think they might be messing with something that they someday may not be able to control. I know if I were on the other side of the line, I wouldn't want to be treated that way.
You'd get even.
I would think so. Yeah, that would certainly be, you know, if you have eternity to play with, you'd certainly have plenty of time to plan your revenge.
Well, some of the ghost hunters, Gary, think it's a game, don't they?
I agree. I agree totally. And I think it should be taken much more seriously.
Yeah. Well, it should. What about the Ouija board? Do you ever dabble with that?
No, never. In my childhood, I had a neighbor that did, and it wasn't pretty. Yeah, I stay as far away from those as I possibly can.
You know about, by the nature of your own family being back to the 1600s, tell me a little bit about some of the historical events from the Old West and places like that. What's that connection like?
Well, my connection is family all the way. You know, being Virginians for that long, of course, we've got quite a history. My family was at the forefront of a lot of major historical events. I've lost family at the Battle of Concord. I've had family fight all the way through the Civil War. And, you know, it just seems like that type of history always carries a presence with it, if you will. As far as Western history, I had a great-great-grandfather that was nearly massacred by Indians while surveying for the Kansas Pacific Railroad and found his way to Denver and survival. Part of the reason why I'm here today, I guess. So we're tied to a lot of little historical events, and of course, in my childhood, I guess I do come from a long line of storytellers. My grandfather, my grandmother, all made sure that they knew where we came from and some very interesting historical facts, be it paranormal or just factual, you know, historical events. So.
Do you deal with at all the psychic realm and what might be happening there?
You know, I think maybe that's where I'm headed. The writing of this book and what research I've done, you know, to finish it up has kind of pointed me in that direction. Yeah, I think that we aren't even scratching the surface on the power that each of us as individuals possess. I for sure don't know how to use it.
Find yourself an old copy of my aunt's book called Breakthrough to Creativity. Her name was Shafika Karagula, Karagulla.
Uh-huh.
She was a psychiatrist who gave up her practice to devote it full time to psychic investigations, telemetry, you name it. She was into it. And she did a remarkable job. She died a little too young, I think, uh-huh. when a radio fell in her bathtub and she got electrocuted.
Ooh, that's horrible.
At least that's what we're told. And,
yeah.
But you got to read it, Gary. And if you're going to go into that direction, it'll help you a lot.
Great. I will do.
She was friends with Ingo Swann, who was the father of remote viewing, and just really believed that there was something else out there, that there was this force, we call it the field now,
uh-huh.
that is out there that everybody just seems to hook in. So it's not just the ghostly realm, it's something else that's that power, I think, that contributed to why we are where we are right now as people. There's something there. I guess let me ask you this. Are you more of a researcher as opposed to an investigator? What would your title be?
I think there's another category, and it's called participant. I feel I was drug into this time. And so I became a researcher, I guess you would say, trying to confirm that I wasn't going crazy, you know, that what was going on in our own personal lives, our own house, was real. And what was it? And so I was searching for clarification, you know, more answers. I couldn't get it from the normal sources, be it people in my church or you know, some friends and family. I just couldn't get the answers I was looking for.
Why not?
I don't feel that a lot of people, especially, and boy, I hope I'm, you know, not overstepping my boundary here, but especially in the church, many people just don't seem to want to touch that subject. You know, in some Christian beliefs.
Are they non-believers? Are they afraid of it?
Well,
what
I think
is
they
it?
Think
dead
it's
is taboo.
Dead. If I'm dealing with an entity or entities in our case, is it demonic? Or certainly most of them would believe that it would be, that if I'm having any type of contact with some sort of an entity like that, that it's automatically a demonic entity, not a friendly one. In our
well, case, because they don't believe, most religious people don't believe in life after death coming back. They believe when you die, your soul, your spirit goes to heaven or goes to hell. But they don't believe in the apparitions coming back to haunt us or to try to help us or anything like that.
I agree. Yeah, yeah, I agree. Uh-huh. And that's definitely, you know, the type of attitude that I ran into. In our case, you know, we had been given advice, you know, right? We were remodeling our house, of course, so write Bible scripture on the back of drywall when you're hanging it up, you know, different things to try to clean our house up, get rid of anything that might resemble an idol, you know, little dream catchers that we had. Symbols of Coco Pelli, whatever it may be, get it out of the house. Let's clean the place up and try to see if we can eliminate whatever it is that's bothering us. And really all it did in our case was aggravate it.
What if some of these people are accurate in that maybe most of these spirits are demons because their dearly departed loved ones are gone. They've moved on.
Yeah.
They've gone to that other realm. What about that possibility?
Well, that would be my biggest fear, because some of the contacts that I had experienced, especially during an investigation with Spirit Realm in Central City, Colorado, there I felt very comfortable. It wasn't a scary event. They, Leanna Jonas, had a way of making it a compassionate event. So I didn't feel threatened as I did with the situation that was in our house. So I began to think in my mind that there must be a difference between what we're communicating with in this investigation and what I'm communicating with in our own house. And so, but that's always been my fear, you know, is it a trick or is it all demonic contact? I wish I could answer that. I really do.
Now in the Chronicles of the Unexplained, with these stories that you've got highlighted, break them down for me in terms of categories.
Okay, yeah. Well, I start, you mean as far as how the book is structured itself?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I started out with haunted houses because I think they're fun, with the exception of the one I was living in.
Of course.
You know, everybody likes the classic haunted house story. And so I decided to do a few stories, you know, related to that. And then I got into some that I thought were quite a bit more fun and quite a bit more believable, and that was the vocational ghosts chapter. And those are ghosts that I tie with people that are at work doing their job. They're just trying to get to quitting time, and something goes on that they can't explain. And the bulk of these stories that I have in my vocational ghosts are railroad, oil field, especially in North Dakota.
Hmm.
You know, vocational type situations where these guys are just too busy. These men and women are working dangerous jobs. They've got other things to be thinking about. You know, really a ghost should be the last thing on their mind, but something interrupted their night's work and scared the heck out of them. And then I got into weird places for my third chapter, you know, areas of the country that seem to be more notoriously haunted than others. There's a place in Colorado, for example, that kind of is in Gilpin and Clear Creek County. It's a Jeep road. that, I mean, hundreds, countless of stories come from that area, from campers and four-wheelers and people, you know, that are exploring the ghost towns and stuff like that. So I definitely had to put it in there, as well as a couple of places from Iowa, some stories from a good friend of mine that I grew up with here in Iowa, from his area and mine, that people today, you know, with development and everything that's going on, it'd be pretty hard to believe that something like that could have existed there as little as 15 or 20 years ago. And then I got into a chapter called The Supernatural Arts of Scaring Outdoor Enthusiasts. And it was a chapter kind of dedicated to the American vacation, and more leaning towards the West. People that are on vacation and have experiences, you know, that they just can't explain. And for some reason, those type of experiences are the most fun to listen to. Great stories to tell around the campfire. I just love those types of stories. I really do. And then we went into a chapter called One Haunted Little Town, and basically we focused on Central City, Colorado, and Gilpin County, you know, surrounding Central City. And
do the people know that their town is haunted?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I couldn't argue that point at all. Yeah, there was a lot of stories coming from that area. We, with the help of Spirit Realm, we got some really nice interviews at some locations that she had investigated, and it was a great time listening to these stories. And I love this town. They celebrate basically their hauntings. They have what is called the creepy crawl in the fall, which I love to be a part of. I love to go there and experience it as a visitor. They have ghost tours in the town and have people dressed up in period costume and telling about either the person that they're portraying, how they died and how they may have come back as a spirit, or you know, explain or tell the story of a specific haunting directly related to the building that you're standing in. It is just the most incredible way to welcome in the fall season. I highly recommend people attending that. It's just wonderful.
Once it hits,
chapter is monsters and things that really go bump in the night, and that is strictly concerning animals that aren't really recognized by science yet. Creatures that people can't explain, experiences from hunters, once again, jeepers, four-wheelers, people out in the country.
Has anybody talked about the Thunderbird, a huge bird that people see?
I've heard about it, but I have never personally ran into anybody firsthand to tell me about it.
I had a story yesterday about Bigfoot, where some individuals have found what they claim to be Bigfoot, though they don't want to call it Bigfoot, bites in bones of deer bones.
Uh-huh.
I've got Scott Marlow coming on Thursday, Gary, to talk about the creatures and chupacabras and Sasquatch as well. It's a huge field. I mean, there are a lot of people devoted to trying to get these answers to these creatures too, aren't there?
Correct. Yeah, there sure are. And, you know, you spend a few nights out in the wild, like we did, there are some nights that you become a believer. You know, there's no other way.
You do become a believer.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. Do you dabble in, and I guess you could have, but I'm not sure you do, you know, satanic things, witchcraft, anything like that?
No, I sure don't. I try to avoid that if I can. Of course, that's all part of the realm, if you will, but it can't be ignored. But I definitely try to keep myself away from that.
I would call that more supernatural than paranormal, would you not?
I would, yes. Correct.
Give us another one of your favorite stories.
Ah, boy. It would have to be...
Not that I want the whole book given. We don't want to do that to you, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think, you know, some of my favorite stories are the Bigfoot stories. You know, I really like stories that people have relayed to me about things that they've seen in the woods that they just can't explain. several have come from Park County, Colorado.
And big area for this. Big area.
I'm sorry?
It's a big area for these kinds of stories.
It's a huge area and a very active area. And then, of course, the White River National Forest, too. And you know, ironically, the vast majority of these sightings come during hunting season, you know, when there's an abnormal amount of people in the backcountry tromping around with firearms and horses and you know, quite a bit more exposure to something that could be out there living, you know, outside of what we know. And so, yeah, I've run into some very interesting stories along those lines. One of them came from my daughter, believe it or not, when we were, my son and I were working in the oil field, and she had seen something walk below our house and out into the horse corral. And she was on basically a third story, her bedroom was third story, so she was quite high off of the ground. The house was kind of built into the side of the mountain, and she heard it walking from up above. It was very late at night, lots of ponderosa pines, so there were a lot of pine needles on the ground, and she could hear this animal, you know, kind of crunching towards the house, if you will, and ended up underneath her deck. And she had tried to get my wife out of bed, but my wife was not getting up for any reason whatsoever. She told her, "Aaron, there's always something outside. I've got the gun. We'll be okay." And so my daughter ran back upstairs, looked out the window just in time to see this animal walk out from under her deck over to the horse corral, which had a big light above it. So she got a good look at the silhouette of the animal. And then it just kind of turned south and headed towards the creek.
Lots of strange creatures out there.
Very, very, yes. And this one appeared to be on two legs. Yeah.
Now you could probably write another book about Nessie experiences and everything else, couldn't you?
I think I have to finish up what I started, George. I've probably got at least 280,000-word manuscripts in my mind right now just from stories that I haven't even touched on from my friends and family. And more coming. You know, the more I talk about this, the more people come to me and say, "No, this happened to me."
They're out there. They're out there indeed. Now, you've got a website too, Gary. Why don't you give it out to people? We've got the link for it because it's kind of long, isn't it?
It's very long. Yeah, it's Gary Gillespie at Chronicles of the Unexplained, I believe is what it is.
All right. Well, we've got that for you. And Gary, only got about a minute left before the top of the hour. Then we're going to come back with phone calls and stories for people. Maybe you can get enough information to write another book. And I think we've just lost you again, so we'll call you back at the top of the hour, and beginning to think, folks, that there could be something going on with the atmosphere because the phone lines are not very friendly to us tonight at all. But next hour, let's open up the phone lines. We'll take your calls with Gary Gillespie as we talk about the unusual, the paranormal, and everything. And while I've got some time, let me mention some more little program notes for you. On our program on Wednesday, we'll be talking about the transfiguration of our world, the difference between good and bad. That's an amazing story, plus a few other surprises for you. If you haven't been liking us on Facebook, that's merely a tone that says kind of like trail along with us. Just go to Facebook.com, if you would. And you can find us at Coast to Coast AM, but we've got a link for you at coasttocoastam.com in the far right-hand corner. And you can click that and like us on Facebook. Definitely follow us along on Twitter as well. And we're on Instagram now, too. So let's come back in a moment with your spooky stories next.